If you have questions about digital photography, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Photo Focus.
Ho, ho, ho. Welcome to a very special edition of the Photo Focus podcast. Just like we promised, it's on Christmas Day. Whether you celebrate Christmas Day or not, we're here. And it is Christmas Day, so it's Christmas Day. And I got some really great news for you. I'm not here alone. I'm with a couple of people who chimed in all the way from Florida. It's Scott Kelby and Matt Kluskowski. Merry Christmas, guys.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
I've got two special guests. We have never done this before in the history of the Photo Focus podcast.
We're in stereo.
We are.
So we're actually going to be changing up the format a little bit on the Photo Focus podcast because we've done nearly 100 shows the way we've always done it, which is taking questions. And you know what I found out, guys? There's only so many photography questions you can answer before you have to start repeating yourself.
That is true. Let me tell you, we know that. We know that in a big, big way.
So I wanted to start, you know, by asking you a question I'm sure you've never heard about Photoshop. Is what's layers?
It's a good question.
Do you guys
something
have
you
like
with
a
your hair.
Recorded answer for some of these that you play on the Photoshop helpline over there at Knapp?
No.
Yeah, it was totally new for us.
Listen, the thing, in case anybody doesn't know, these two guys are from the Kelby Media Group, and they publish a plethora, a virtual cornucopia of all kinds of content related to things that all photographers are interested in. We've got National Association of Photoshop. We've got Kelby Media. We got Kelby Training. We got books. We got each of you, why don't you just start off the show by telling us what your most recent project is?
All right, Matt, you got a really cool project. Tell them yours.
So probably my most recent one was a Photoshop compositing book. That one came out in August, and it's, you know, I know we always get a lot of people that it's kind of funny that ask what is compositing. So it's just, you know, you take multiple photos. You take a person, a photo of a person, and then you put them somewhere else, you know, where, you know, maybe they just couldn't be, maybe the conditions weren't right, whatever it happens to be. But you take a photo of a person, and then you put them into some type of a different background. And I wrote a book on it to basically show all different styles of compositing, whether it's a sports composite or a family composite where everybody in the family couldn't be together, lots of different things, kind of along those lines.
I read it, and I actually learned from it. I did some of the lessons.
Well, cool.
Yeah, because I already know what I know, so I need to know what you know.
Yeah, so that's probably the most recent one. And then I think the other most recent one that I think both Scott and I are a big part of is Light It Magazine.
Finally, episode two.
Yes, our second issue came out just this Christmas Day, kind of a couple weeks ago. So,
and you could tell that Scott
really,
Kelby
really excited about that.
Scott Kelby wasn't the least bit frustrated that it took a couple of days for that to happen.
Oh, it was brutal. It was turned down 5 times in a row by the App Store. And, you know, when they turn you down, they don't go, oh, well, there's you did this checkbox wrong, so just fix that and then resubmit it. Every time you do it, it can be a 2-week period before they tell you it's not ready again.
Yeah,
and then you have to go fix it and then resubmit. Well, you know, it's
I've had that experience. It's very unfortunate, but it's worth it because the product is amazing and beautiful. What I wanted to do before we get started into, I do have a couple of questions from the audience that we're going to ask, but what we're going to do in terms of the show format, at least as an experiment for now right now, we're just going to talk about some of the trending topics in the industry with some of our guests, and since you guys are so close to it, without asking you to violate your NDA, I'd like you to discuss what you think some of the future trends we're going to see in maybe the next round of Photoshop and Lightroom. And Scott, I think we'll start with a controversial topic because you've opined on it, which is the new change in the upgrade policy. And have you heard anything back from Adobe on your very elegant letter?
I've heard many, 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 many things from Adobe since I wrote that letter.
And they're all
my phone is ringing immediately. No. I wouldn't have written that letter if I didn't have the relationship I do with Adobe. They know, and I think they expect me to be straight with them. They have enough people that go, "You're the greatest." I think.
Yeah.
They're like when they see the phone ringing, it's me. They're like, "Oh no, it's Scott online too." And they know, you know, what my position is, and that I have to be the voice of our you know, our users and things. So I think that they kind of expected that from me. I don't think that anybody was shocked. I don't think anybody was thrilled, but I think they were surprised. But yes, and so I don't want to speak on about any of what they said, because it's really the ball's in
sure.
Adobe's court. But it has been my experience with Adobe, and it always has. That they're very, very well, I guess let me say they're always, I think now more than ever they listen to their users, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. There are very few companies that listen to their customers, and this was the first breath of it, right? This is the first kind of announcement of it, and so we're now in the stage where the customers are letting Adobe know how they feel about it, and then now it's the balls in Adobe's court to see whether they're going to continue on with what they were going to do or alter their plan. And I don't really know what Adobe's ultimate plan will be, but I hope that, and my guess is that they will reconsider, because just, and I don't have any NDA on this. No one's called me to Adobe and said, hey, here's what we're doing. You know, they've called me plenty, but they haven't told me what they're doing. My guess is that they're listening to their customers. So I'm very hopeful that's what we'll hear. But I mean, eventually I think Adobe will. I offered them my blog to respond, you know, when they're ready. So,
yeah, the controversy arose because they changed a longstanding policy that you could upgrade way back, and now you can only upgrade one version back. So if you want to go to Photoshop 6, you got to have 5.
Yeah, you have to have 5 or 5.5.
Yeah, and in the past, you could have gone way back.
Yeah, well, if you had Photoshop 4, there is no upgrade path for you anymore, basically, unless you first upgraded to 5.5 and then to 6.
Right.
So it's kind of leaving a lot of folks behind. That's what I was concerned about. It's like we're leaving, I want everybody using Photoshop.
Sure. Now, Matt, have you talked with anybody that's tried the rental, the sort of month-to-month thing with Photoshop?
I haven't talked with anybody that's tried it.
What do you think of that policy?
You know, if I owned a company, I think it's got a lot of merit to it. I mean, you know, think about when you come up with software, you come out with software, that software, it's come out, and of course you get a huge spike in sales when the software comes out, and it's kind of like a book, you know, you get a huge spike in sales, and then everything starts tapering down. So if you had to plan your yearly budget around a book coming out, it'd be really difficult to do 8 months into it, because you're not going to be making the same as you did when day one when that book came out. And I think so, from a business perspective, for a software company, it makes a lot of sense. And I think from, if you're a business owner, it gives you a way to plan out your software budget. You know for the next however many years exactly what you're going to spend on software that your company needs to survive every day. You know exactly how much you're going to spend every, you know, basically to the penny, right? I think where it gets kind of hairy is when if you're just a hobbyist or a really enthusiastic hobbyist, then it starts to become harder, because they're not necessarily earning their income off of it. They love the software. They love everything that they can do with it, but It's a little bit of a more difficult situation where
Are you talking about renting the software, like the rental program where you can just rent, or are you talking about the cloud initiative?
I was talking
because
about
they have renting Photoshop now.
Right.
Yeah.
I just was curious. I haven't talked to anybody who's actually doing it, so I just
I have. I've talked to people at my seminars that are doing it.
And what do they think?
And they love it. They're like crazy about it, because it allowed people who could not plunk down $700 to buy Photoshop to finally use Photoshop. It's a lot easier to pay, you know, a small monthly amount, you know, than it is. I mean, literally, it was out of reach. And so I've had people at my seminars come up and say, hey, I just started renting Photoshop, and oh, man, I finally have it. And they've been excited about it. So I think for the people that need it, it's great. But so, Matt, what I was pinging over to you is – I just could see Matt over there. I was pinging over to Matt what I think Matt was talking about was what's coming up, which is the monthly fee that you pay to use the Creative Suite and all of Adobe's products.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was Yeah, so just I wanted to just point out two different things there.
Well, I recently held a poll on my Twitter stream and got lots of response when I said, what features are you looking for in the new Photoshop? And, you know, some of the biggest responses weren't really what I was hoping for, which was things like, oh, I want to have a better healing brush, or I want this. It was like a lower price, which brings me to think that a lot of people may not be aware, and I don't know, maybe you guys should have a different opinion. It's my opinion that if you're a photographer, now I'm not talking about designers, illustrators, artists, but if you're a photographer, that Photoshop Elements, which is pretty dang cheap, in fact, I think you could buy it for $50 yesterday a couple places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's got you 99% of the way, and that's a pretty big price reduction. What do you think? I'll start with you, Kelby.
As far as what do I think about $50 for Elements being a good deal?
Yeah, I mean, like, do you think that the people who say, well, I can't pay $700 for Photoshop and they need to lower the price, the best solution for them is just get Elements?
Yeah, can I tell you? And I mean this sincerely, and Adobe knows this. It's their product. They priced it. That is the best deal in software in the world. It really is. You're getting like 80 to 85% of real Photoshop for a fraction of the price. There are things that I like that Elements does that I think is – there are things that is an Elements organizer that I like better than the bridge.
Yep.
And there are
I think I like the whole Elements organizer better than the bridge.
I would say absolutely.
I'm still looking
but
for somebody to like
that,
bridge.
Yeah. And you know what else, too? They sometimes put features in Elements first, and if they go over well, then they move over to Photoshop. So, and vice versa, of course. But I think Elements is an absolute insane bargain. I tell people on my Lightroom tour, like, well, I can't afford Photoshop. Like, well, go get Elements. Because, you know, I've been doing this tour called Light It, Shoot It, Retouch It. And it's been going around the country. And I tell people at the end of the day, you can do every single thing that I did today, every filter I used, every retouch I did, every single thing using Elements.
Wow.
Because they've added so many things. Once they added layer masks, now we always used to – Matt and I wrote a book on Elements, so thanks for bringing this topic up. And anyway,
which, by the way,
is
coming out.
Yeah, it's brand new, by the way. We would show people how to use this kind of clunky workaround to create a layer mask-like effect. But then Adobe finally said, oh, let's just put layer masks in.
Yep.
I mean, seriously, it's like the power in Elements for the money is absolutely – I just don't think a lot of people realize it. I mean, I really don't. You know how they, people say, it's the best kept secret, you know, like this restaurant nobody knows about or whatever. I'm telling you what. I mean, you never see an ad for Elements, do you, Matt?
No.
You never see
an
ad? Scott, you ever see a –
No.
Like, read an ad that says, look at these cool things you could do in Elements.
Yeah, no.
You just almost have to know. It's like, you just have to, it's like whispered in hallways, get Elements, it's unbelievable, for $50. It's great.
Well, when I was doing some very minimal training on Photoshop, and I mean, I'm careful to speak about my ability to teach Photoshop in front of two masters, but I was just doing a very, very, very basic for beginning photographers, and I was running it on a MacBook Air. So I used Elements because it's just low overhead. And I was able to show all the basics to explain it to people.
Yeah.
But I think it's an amazing program. And I tell most photographers, unless you're going to branch out into using, you know, InDesign and other things and you're a designer and you've got a bunch of graphic arts background, if you're just a photographer, start with Elements. You may never need anything else. Now, Matt, what do you think about the combination of a better organizer like Lightroom paired with Elements? Is there enough power in the crossover?
And by the way, Scott and I don't really talk about this much, but it's funny because I echo Scott. Like, whenever I talk to people, I tell them the same thing. I get Elements. I mean, any friend I have, very rarely do I have to say, yeah, sorry, you need the full version of Photoshop. So just to kind of show you, I echo Scott's Scott's thoughts on that. But as far as the organizer, so I think the Elements organizer is actually really cool. I mean, it's probably a little bit even more visual than Lightroom, which I guess, you know, maybe goes, I guess you could say it's more of a hobbyist thing, but I think it's got a lot of pro features in it, and there's some ways that you can do things inside of the organizer that I think would be pretty cool inside of Lightroom too. Just the way you tag and everything inside of the organizer, I'd love to see that type of a feature inside of Lightroom. Or, you know, they have keywords and stuff. But I think if you're using the organizer to its full potential, you're probably about ready for Lightroom.
Okay.
You know, once you get to that point where you were using the organizer for all those things, and you know, I think you're probably about ready to move over to a program like Lightroom, and then just use Elements to kind of jump in there and do any quick little retouches and things like that that kind of have to happen beyond there.
Okay. Well, I think what I want to say is that I hope the audience who hasn't got the money to buy Photoshop will consider Elements, because I totally agree with you, and I think that there's this feeling, we've probably both, all of us have seen it, that we get new photographers come up to us and say, well, I'm thinking about a lens, should I get that new 70-200 f2.8 IS super duper $4,000 lens? And we're like, you know, maybe you don't need to start there. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's okay to start with a starter lens and see how much you like it and what you're going to do. Start with Elements. And I'm going to take a wild guess here that at Kelby Training, you can learn how to use Elements.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Nah. We hate Elements.
So you can go over to KelbyTraining.com.
We're kidding.
What is it, like 25 bucks a month or something?
Yeah.
So you pay like 25 bucks a month, learn Elements, and then if you go, wow, I'm going to really make a career out of this, or I'm going to use this all the way, then you can look at getting Photoshop. All right, let's just talk about another quick thing. Now, you're not going to violate your NDA. I don't have one. I'm going to just briefly talk about something that I've overheard Adobe say in public for the most part, which is we know that video is going to play a bigger role in the next versions of Photoshop and or Lightroom. I'm just wondering how you guys feel about the concept of video being more tied in.
Well, if you look at the video, the new features in Photoshop CS6, you'll find that. Just kidding. Matt's probably over there like,
going there, buddy.
What? What?
My phone was glowing red because somebody from Adobe already knew it was fun. I'm not asking
you to talk about
what's in the product. I'm just asking you.
I was just totally baiting you there. So here's the thing: is without going into any feature specific things, all you have to do is look at where the camera company is going, because I mean Adobe follows the camera, you know, the photography market. When everybody jumped over to photography, Photoshop went from being a graphic designer's tool exclusively to being one for designers and now for photographers. But I think that. Everyone's going to be adding video stuff. You kind of have to, because, Scott, name me a DSLR that you can buy that doesn't shoot video. It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't think of one. Yeah.
That's right. They all have video, and people are going to need to do it. But you know what? You know what the log jam is here? It really is editing that video. Because you know what? Learning Photoshop is hard enough. Now I got to go learn an editing program. We're going to learn Final Cut Pro or After Effects, or more likely Premiere Pro, you know, and so I can't imagine that Adobe is going to ignore this, but it's not just Adobe. I think everybody's looking at video stuff. So, I think that everyone is going to be coming out with video solutions. Easy ones, I hope that are not. We don't have time, dude. I don't have time, Matt. You got time to learn a new program?
No, and definitely not to do all the stuff that you need with video. I think Scott's right on the money, and I hope that it's just I think we need the basics, right? You know, we don't need all the crazy stuff with video. It's just, you know, putting two video clips together.
If you give me the crazy stuff, I'll just go learn Premiere Pro.
Well, yeah. See, now
right?
This
you're
going to
add a bunch of features?
The feedback that I got from people was, well, if I want to do video, I'll learn Premiere Pro. I'm like, A, not everybody needs to do that level of video.
Right.
B,
that's a hard program.
And not everybody can afford it. It's not. It's like Photoshop. It's expensive. It has a lot of overhead. I mean, the very basic stuff. For instance, now I'm going to get hate mail from the Windows fellas, but, you know, every iMac, every Mac comes with iPhoto and iMovie and, you know, that kind of level of editing being inherent in your photo application, if it's just at that level, it could be a big deal, because every single trip I go out, I shoot video, and it would be nice to be able to play with it a little bit more. Now, I'm an aperture guy, and we have a little more access to the video than Lightroom or Photoshop in the current versions, but I think that it's really, I think that you look at slideshows that incorporate video and stills and all the different things that are being done, it'd be nice to have some basic functionality. And I'd be interested in knowing what the real objection from people would be, Scott. That's, I mean, they're like, well, you can't do that. I mean, why do you care? If you don't want to use it, don't use it.
Yeah. Right. And I think that you know, you talk to people, Scott, you'll talk to people and say, oh, you're shooting DSLR video. What do you do with it? Nothing.
Duh.
It just sits on your computer as individual
on your
file.
Hard drive. Yeah.
Why don't you edit them? Well, because I don't want to learn to program and all. So I'm hoping that in future versions of all kinds of Adobe software, you know, I wish Adobe would just make his super easy software editor. What do we need to do? A title screen. We need one transition. The default is cut, right? So give me one transition, dissolve. Give me. You know, an opening slide and ending slide, the ability to put a music track. There's every wedding photographer in America needs right there.
Yeah.
Now, will Adobe do that? That's a whole different question.
Well, and all you really need to do is then just add a very basic color grading tool, which could be nothing more than, you know, click the eyedropper tool, touch it to the photograph you want to match, and then color grade the video to match that, and you're done.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Maybe we should start a company that makes that program.
Dude, I've talked to a number of companies. I think you're going to see that stuff. I think you're going to see that stuff very, very quickly.
Yeah, I know.
I'd like to see like an Animoto, almost an Animoto-like type of a workflow for video in a photographic program. You know what I mean? Something that kind of nudges you along the right path of including video in with your photos. I think that'd be pretty cool too.
Oh, now that would be all kinds of awesome.
Well, aperture. Everybody's describing aperture here, aren't we?
I didn't want to say that in front of a bunch of Adobe Photoshop people. this is probably a good time for me to take a break and say something good about Animoto. Animoto is my favorite place to do online videos and slideshows of my photographs. You'll be hearing this show on the 25th. If you act within 5 days, you can go to Animoto and get their Plus product, Animoto Plus, which is $30 a year. You can get 15 months of that for 12 months. There'll be a special code. You can click on the banner on the photofocus.com website to pick that up and use it. And that goes away. So if you're listening to this after the 30th, sorry, you can just go to Animoto Pro and pay the regular price. But for right now, we got that going on. I also want to thank really quickly my friends at SmugMug. That's a great place to host videos that you could make on things like Animoto or other ways that you make video. It's also a great place to host your photographs if you want to sell them. They can take care of everything, including even printing them and shipping them. That's all from SmugMug.com. Another banner on the PhotoFocus site for that. And just a reminder, at PhotoFocus.com, 7 days a week we have photo-related contact. Now back to our special guest all the way from Kelby Media Group, Scott Kelby, the namesake, and Matt Kleskowski. Thanks again for joining us for the Christmas Day show, Photo Focus. I appreciate you guys coming on.
Oh, sure. We're
hey, thanks,
we're
man.
Grooving it, man. We're grooving it, right, man?
I do.
Merry Christmas.
I want to talk about your. I'm glad you brought this up, Scott. Your Shoot It, Light It, Retouch It tour.
Yeah.
I'm wondering to what if you had to gauge. Without naming names, and of course you have thousands of people who come to this, so you wouldn't do that anyway, but what do you really think the level of knowledge of light is? My experience has been that a lot of photographers are still struggling with some of the basics, and since you're out teaching this in the field, I'm wondering what you're finding.
Well, I that's why I did the tour, and I wrote a book by the same name, because if you pick up a book on lighting, it's almost like that every author decided, I'm going to make sure that no one can ever do this stuff. It's like, it's almost like you're in a secret club and it's passed from person to person. Here's how to really do it. Because, you know, and honestly, and it's going to sound stupid when I say it, lighting just isn't that hard. It really isn't. And I think that we've been made to believe that you have to do all these really hard stuff. And if you don't understand lighting ratios and you don't understand the inverse law and you don't understand all of these things, that you can't get a good picture. And then I think a lot of people throw their hands up. I think the biggest culprit of all of this is people that go out and buy a three-light kit. A three-light kit is a recipe for disaster.
Especially
just buy one freaking light. buy one light, get good at that one light, and then maybe then get a second light. But, you know, people buy three light kits and four light kits, and they set all four lights up, and everything is like crap, and there's no way out. It's you're in too deep, and it's just, and I think that's part of it. But, you know, you buy a book on lighting, and they're going to show you lots of different lights and lots of different lighting setups, and it's very easy to get into trouble fast. So I think that people struggle with light on a level that, and, you know, I always tell people in my seminars, you guys are overthinking this. And I hear people that get in line and they ask me questions, go, well, Mr. Kelby, the f-stop that I'm using, is it sharp enough? Because I don't want to shoot it at past two stops over f. I mean, they start doing all this mathematics. I'm like, really? Really? Look, put the light over to the left. Fire. You know, I mean, I think that there's just an inherent thing that lighting should be very difficult, and it is very difficult. And I have people that leave my end of my day, and they're sending me notes, and they're like, I just had no idea. It's just, I just expected it to be so much more complex and so much harder. And I was like, it's just not today. Today, it's all so dang easy, you know?
Well,
you know,
you Scott, start, if you start with Joe McNally's latest approach to it, you might be a little overwhelmed when you see 25
okay, well,
flashes.
Joe McNally is the magical unicorn of light. You cannot – don't even look at – his stuff is so great. He is so good at that stuff. And you just look at it and you go, oh, my God. So – but here's the thing. And this is what I tell the people in my seminars, right? There are three settings in your camera. You're shooting in the studio, right? This is studio lighting. So
right.
There's three settings, right? ISO, your f-stop, and your shutter speed, right? In the studio – you're going to set two of those at the beginning of the day. You're never, ever going to touch them.
Right.
Not a single time. How could this be hard?
Exactly.
You're only going to move one setting, and you're not going to move that one very much. But if you're scared of moving that last one, there's a little box you can buy that will you will press the button on it, and it will say, set your f-stop to this.
And that will be
two of the settings. If two of the settings, right, are never going to change, you're going to set them when you walk in the door. And you'll set, if you have a nine-hour shoot, those settings will never change. You'll set them at 1 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and at 10 o'clock at night, they still have not changed. Then there's only one left, and there is a box called a light meter that will tell you exactly, set your camera to F9.
Okay.
How hard can it be?
It's not that hard. Matt,
it really isn't. So I think that's what's
right. Do you do any artificial lighting, Matt?
I do, and you know, I think
artificial. All of his lighting is artificial, by the way.
Yeah, Scott and I have we've talked about this on our shows before too. But you know, one of the stumbling blocks is it's the creative part that happens after all those technical settings.
Right.
Because you know, Scott's absolutely right. You're going to set your shutter speed. You're going to set your ISO, and most of the time you're going to set your aperture to one setting. And those are never going to change. It's looking at what you shoot and getting, you know, positioning the light, getting the brightness of the light, getting all that stuff to the point where creatively you know you took a great picture. And that's so much harder than the technical settings. Like, you can nail the technical settings. You know exactly what they
but
should
be. But see, that's the thing, Matt. That's it. People think that they think the problem is a setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They don't, you know, it's like Matt just said, once you've got the technical settings down, then you need to focus on the shoot. They don't get past the technical settings.
Right.
Because they think, they're like, there's got to be a button in here somewhere in this menu is the make good photo button. And
yeah.
If I could just find that button, then all of a sudden everything would look great. And it's just, it's not. It's what Matt just said is that other stuff where they really should be struggling is coming up with really creative photos. But they want to struggle with something else. They're like, I would really rather try to find it, mess with settings and mess with menus and find out where that button is than spending time on just realizing it's three easy settings. Now let's move on to creating great photography.
Yeah, great photography isn't about the technical stuff. We all know that, but we all wish it was because then you could
yeah,
just
we
buy
wish it was because then it would
just
be repeatable.
Buy something.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's easier to master.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know who Monty Zucker is?
Oh, I love Monty. He you know, God rest his soul, he was a wonderful, wonderful teacher.
Monty,
Scott, I saw him when he was here in Sarasota, you know, a couple years before he passed. That was, yeah, we enjoyed meeting him quite a bit.
I
terrific
love,
person.
I, I loved and learned a lot from Monty, and he had a saying that I heard, I don't know, maybe 1992 is the first time I heard it. He used to say expression over perfection.
Yeah.
Because he's like, if you get a good expression in a photo, nobody's going to come check your f-stop.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to want to buy the photo.
Yeah.
And I think we forget that it's the expression, it's the warmth, it's the emotion, it's the real contact, the storytelling, the connection between the photographer and the subject that makes a photograph sing. Look at R.C.'s famous photograph of his little girl sitting at, you know, her mom's feet wearing the ballet outfit. You know, I don't give a rat's, you know what f-stop, shutter speed, ISO, camera, lens, tripod, ball head, or post-processing software was used. That's just a great photograph.
Yeah. You know what made it a great photograph, though?
Tell us.
The post-processing. No, I'm just kidding. No, you know what it is? It is. It's all about that. I mean, now he composed the photo very, very well, too. The composition is great. He shot it down low in the way he captured. But it was a photo of capturing the moment. All the technical things were there. His composition was great. The lighting was great. Everything was great. But it's that expression that of her the little baby looking up, the little toddler looking up at her mom, the ballerina, and being like, that's going to be me one day. That's, I thought, it was an amazing shot. Not based on anything, any setting in the camera. It was based on, she was just here today, by the way. Archie brings his daughter, it brings the place to a halt.
Oh,
his daughter is so sweet. It is insane. And she'll say, very nice to meet you. And you just melt. And she'll put her hand out and
cute.
Oh, it's just, but cute, like on a level that's psychotic.
I wouldn't be able to not photograph her.
Oh yeah, well R.C. shoots her to death. I mean, he's got the best subject walker in his house all day long. I'm surprised he comes into work.
If he doesn't win a Pulitzer Prize, it's on him.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hey, before we go on, I want to take just a moment to thank my friends over at Tenba, who provide some really cool bags. I use their messenger bags, and we have a little video you can watch to see them in action over at photofocus.com. And also want to thank my friends at BarnellLenses.com, who constantly put gear in my hands everywhere I go so that I don't have to ship my own there at BarnellLenses.com. I do have a couple of questions. Actually, I have like five questions that are the same question that came from five different people, and I've been waiting to talk to one or both of you about them, and I'd like to get each of you to chime in for about 60 seconds on this. There seems to be a lot of concern in my audience, at least, with sharpening and knowing how much sharpening to use for print versus how much sharpening to use for an on-screen presentation, because I've mentioned to people over and over one of the reasons we like to sharpen last is because we don't know what's going to happen to the picture, and you do want to sharpen different amounts. And I'd like to have each of you guys, Matt, maybe you can go first, give me 60 seconds or so on your take on how you decide how much for one versus the other.
Okay, so I'll start off with screen, because screen's really, really easy. You sharpen until it looks good on the screen. And when it looks good on your screen, it's going to look good on everybody else's screen, too.
Wait a minute. Wait. There's not a magical formula? 1x times not 3, carry the R, and...
No. I think we all have our favorite sharpening settings, but you sharpen enough until it looks good on screen. There's not much more to it, because it looks good on your screen. It's going to look good on somebody else's web page. It's going to look good on screen, because nothing changes, right?
Right.
So the next part is the print sharpening. That one, I think the best advice for print sharpening is you have to do a test print, because you sharpen your photo, you have to sharpen it for print to where it looks a little bit over sharpened on screen, and then you print it and it looks good, but you don't find out what that sharpening amount is until you print it. And sometimes it's too much. Sometimes you look at it and you're like, gosh, I probably could have sharpened more. But you know what's cool about it? Once you find it once and you do a test print that one time, chances are whatever those settings you did that one is going to work the next time. So you don't have to do a test print every single time. But I think one of the key ingredients for print sharpening is you just have to start doing some test prints. Over sharpen it. It should look a little bit more sharp on screen. You should be able to look at it and say, yeah, that's kind of sharpened. That's a little bit too sharp. And when you print it out, all that stuff smooths out.
You know, I'm just so disappointed that you're not going to give me a radius setting.
I'm not going to give you a radius setting.
Every picture I ever take
okay,
will look good.
Here, Scott, I'll tell you. I'll give you the radius setting that I leave. I barely ever change my radius setting. I leave it at 1.3, 1.4. And that's pretty much where I leave it at.
I never change. I was betting on 1.4, just so you know. Okay.
Yeah, that's about where
I feel better now. Mr. Kelby, how about you?
Well, what Matt said at the very end of this thing is exactly what I teach in my class. I used to teach a class called Photoshop for Photographers. The last class of the day was about printing, and I did a whole thing on sharpening. And the thing about print is, and what Matt said about web is exactly right on the money. I will give you, unlike Matt, I will give you a full setting that I use. I have two settings that I use, and depending on how crispy I want the photo. So for my regular standard everyday web sharpening, 85 for amount, 1 for radius, and 4 for threshold. 85, 1, and 4.
Wait a minute. We're all writing this down. 85,
1, 4. And 4.
Everybody got that? Okay. We're ready.
Now, so that's when it's already down to web size, like it's going to go up on the web, and I'm getting ready to sharpen it. I also try 150, 1, and 10, which is a slightly different level of sharpening. And so sometimes I'll run one, see what it looks like, and then try the other. So those are two that I commonly use for web-ready photographs. Now, when it comes to print, so with print, I find that exactly like what Matt said, what I tell my students is this. Drag the amount. So now, so for print, I'm going to give you a print setting too since Matt wouldn't.
I did say 1.4.
Yeah, that's one of the three settings. Good job, Matt. Here you go. That's helpful. It's not like Gaussian blur is the only one you can give one number for, and it works for everybody. Okay, so here's – try this one for your next print job. Try 100.
Okay.
1.5 and 3.
Wait a minute. That'd be different than 1.4.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Are we saying that there's disagreement between the Kelby media team on this particular side?
Well, you know what it is? Everybody in here sharpens differently. We've got, from where I'm sitting, I can see Matt's desk, and I see Matt, and he has a very dour-looking face. Then I see, I'm just kidding. Then I see, you know, RC Concepcion's desk is next to that. Corey Barker's desk is next to that. On the other side of Matt is Pete Collins. I got Brad Moore straight across the hall from me. Every one of us uses different sharpening settings. And the only one that's right is me.
Okay.
Just totally kidding. But I will give you that sharpening setting, that 100, 1.5, and 3, and occasionally I will bump it up to 120. Now, here's what I tell my students, and I would use the 1.5 and 3, but the amount slider. Here's what I tell them exactly this, and it's kind of based on what Matt said. Look at the image on the screen and start dragging the amount slider to the right. Don't look at the number, just look at the screen. Start dragging. As soon as you go, ooh, that's too sharp, stop. Don't back up. Stop. If it looks, ooh, that's too much, it's probably perfect for printing. Mm-hmm. So do this. Before you go to print, duplicate the background namer. Duplicate the background layer. Okay, duplicate the background layer. Name that layer, sharpen for print, and then sharpen that layer, and then print that. That way, when you're done, if you want to make a web-ready version or whatever, you haven't destroyed the original one. You know, you've got a separate one that's a layer just for print. So it can have its own heavy, massive sharpening. Matt is making gestures to me. Matt is gesturing to me, Scott, and they're not friendly gestures. It's not the peace sign, I can tell you. Anyway, those are a couple of sharpening tips that don't just give you one of the three numbers.
Well, here's it. I'm going to tell you something. I'm thoroughly glad to hear you guys talk about test prints because I mean, I'm sure that Ansel Adams never made a test print, right? He just knew.
He used soft proofing.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. I tell people they made test prints in the wet darkroom. It's okay to make them in the digital darkroom. In fact, it's cheaper.
You don't have to make them big. People forget that. You don't have to run a test print that's 16 by 20.
No, 8x10, 4x5, 5, whatever piece of paper you got in there.
Exactly. You know, Scott, for a guy who tries to make it sound like you're not that good at Photoshop, you know way too much about Photoshop to not be really good at it.
Well, see, I'm trying to hide.
Yeah, you're sandbagging, dude.
I wrote a book about Photoshop.
Well, that explains it then.
For photographers. But it was like 1,000 years ago. Version 1 or something. I don't know. I mean, I don't even think we had layers back then. I mean, it was...
When dinosaurs ruled the Earth?
No, we did have layers, but I again, this is where I started my first controversy because I flattened. Yeah.
Yes!
We flattened, too.
Yeah, I heard.
Oh, I do all the time.
Yeah, dude. But when you guys did
the Photoshop...
Today. When you guys did the Photoshop World Kiss thing, that was funny when you were talking about the flattening layers.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Hey, Scott, can I give a... Can I give the listeners a little test print a test print tip here?
I would love it. If
of course you.
Oh,
you
and by the way,
you
need to mention that Matt is a black belt in karate, so listen to him.
And it's going to be a lot better than the unsharp mask setting. So.
I get burned.
No. All right. So here's the test print tip. Is you take your photo. If you right click, let's say we're in Lightroom, okay. And you right click on your photo and you choose create virtual copy, because what one of the biggest problems everybody has with printing, in addition to sharpening, is the prints are always dark, right? They're always darker than they look on our bright, nice backlit LCD screen. So you make a virtual copy. It's kind of like a fake copy of the photo. You take the brightness slider. Knock it up by like 10. You right-click again. You make another one. You knock it up by 20. You right-click again. You do it, and you make one 30 and 40 and 50. And if you go into the print module, you can print a 16 by 20, 17 by 22, and drag each one of those onto the print. So they don't all have to be full size. You're just going to make one print. But when you're done, you can look at which one was kind of the sweet spot for what you did. And at that point, you pretty much have the formula. So you don't have to do a test print every time. You know that for whatever your screen and whatever your settings are at, that plus 30 seems to work the best. So whenever you're going to print something, drag it up to plus 30. But you can do it all in one print. That's the key, is you get four or five smaller ones onto the big page, and that way you can kind of just sit back and look at which one works.
That is brilliant.
So, my tip of the day.
And I'll just mention, for those in the audience like me that are over 50, we used to call that a test strip.
Mm-hmm.
In the wet dark.
A test strip.
We'd make a test strip. And you'd have to sit there and smell Dettol in the morning. But okay, well, that was really fun. And it was actually quite informative as well as entertaining. I do want to mention one more quick sponsor, and then we're going to wrap up with another question and our special Christmas edition of Photo Focus. I want to say thanks to Adorama. More than a camera store at adorama.com. All right, now we have another couple of questions, and this one also could be basically controversial, but I have to answer. I answer this question the same way every time. I think you guys are going to answer it, but you have an aperture course at Kelby Training, so I know you're not necessarily anti-aperture. You guys are mostly known for your Adobe stuff, but Guy writes in and says, what should I do, Lightroom or Aperture? Kelby, go.
Okay. Number one, I have Aperture. So I have Aperture on my drive. I make my slideshows in Aperture, and I make my books in Aperture. And I don't make that any secret. I think Aperture is a great product, and I think that it's slideshow and books features are tremendously better than Lightroom's. So Lightroom slideshow gives me suicidal thoughts, and there is no book feature in Lightroom. So... That being said, here's what I think. I talk to people all the time, and they will say to me, I'm on Aperture. Should I switch to Lightroom? And people come to my lighted shooter, retouch it, and they're using Aperture. I tell them this. So the first thing I'm going to talk about, should you switch, like which one should be on, is to tell them this. Look, you move from Aperture to Lightroom, you are going to love some stuff there. You're going to love the camera raw stuff. You're going to love some of the sorting. And you're going to love the speed, and you're going to love this, but you're going to miss stuff about Aperture. Both of these products have things that are really, really great about them, right? There's really, really great stuff about Photoshop. There's really, really great stuff about Aperture. Here's how I tell people which one. If you haven't chose either one and you want to know which one to choose, I would say this. What do you want to do with your photography? If you want to make presentations, so you want to do slideshows and things like that, do not Lightroom. If your main thing is slideshows, get Aperture. Aperture does absolutely fantastic slideshows. Wonderful. if you want to make photo books. At this point, you would absolutely have to say Aperture. Lightroom doesn't really do photo books. You could create individual pages and then send it to somebody, but Aperture not only assembles the books, they have brilliant templates already designed by pro designers. It goes straight to Apple. They print it and send it, turn it right back around to you. So from those aspects, if those are your, like, showing your work either in books, showing your work in slideshows with music and all the different stuff, you definitely should be an Aperture user. Now, if your main thing is printing, just printing individual prints, making 16 by 20s, things like that, and you really want to use what I think is the best editing tool as far as, you know, like Camera Raw is the industry standard, then in that case, I think Adobe's got them edged there. I think Camera Raw is better than what you have in Aperture for editing images. Not that the one in Aperture is bad, but I think that Adobe's is certainly better. There are a couple of other things. Number one, if you're on a Windows machine, This is easy. There is no Aperture for Windows. So that makes it a very, very quick decision. And, you know, feature by feature, they're very, very closely matched. This is like saying, should I get Canon or Nikon?
Right.
There are things you'll like and features that the Nikon has that the Canon doesn't, and vice versa. But I think in this case, it's a little clearer because you can say, slideshows and printing books are important to you, get Aperture. Camera Raw editing and printing, and you know, I think a better organization way, Lightroom. But either way, you can't go wrong. You can't lose. I mean, obviously, we chose Lightroom, right? Matt and I have Lightroom Tour. I've got a Lightroom book. Matt runs Lightroom Killer Tips. We're biased, so you know, we chose that. But the majority of the pros out there are using Lightroom. When I go to my seminar and I ask how many people here are using Lightroom, it looks like every hand in the room. Mm-hmm. I do talk to a handful of people using Aperture. I think a lot of people own Aperture. Like you buy your Mac and it says, do you also want Aperture, this great program? Mm-hmm. Sure, I'll buy that. $79, I'm in, you know. But I don't very often talk to people using Aperture. I think I'm one of the only Aperture users I know. Now, that because of that, Scott, there's not a lot of Aperture training out there. There's not a lot of books on Aperture. The only seminar I've ever seen on Aperture comes from basically Apple. There's not a big community
support
built around Aperture. It's a very, very, very tiny little community where the Lightroom community is massive.
Yeah,
so
it's definitely limited. And what little training is out there pretty much has been done by me.
Yeah. So there you go. And so anyway, but that gives people an idea, because I think people expect me to say, no, get Lightroom in every situation. But I'm not like that, so I don't mind telling people when.
You gave a very honest answer.
Yeah.
Matt, where do you come down on this?
You know what? I have to take the cop out here, but I don't think I can say anything different than what Scott said. I mean, we talk about this quite a bit, and we both go out there. We're out on the road. We give tours, and over time, we've just talked so much about it that, you know, our feelings tend to be the same about this. We both love Lightroom. That's the program we use. I'm with Scott. I mean, I think the slideshow module inside of Lightroom is lacking compared to Aperture. And like you said, it doesn't have photo books. The only thing I'll add to it is integration with Photoshop. You know,
okay.
So regardless of what you're on, so many people use Photoshop for their editing. And if you use Photoshop for your editing, then Lightroom has tighter integration. You know, you've got things that can go straight from Lightroom into Photoshop. And you have to assume that that's just going to get better over the years, right? You know, Adobe's not going to strip away integration. They're probably just going to tighten that integration as time goes on.
So what I'll add to this, there's two other factors. One is they're both free to try. So I recommend the people to try them both. Doesn't cost you anything, right?
Yeah,
that's true.
And the second thing is, if your little, and I'm talking about your little local community of photographers that you hang out with, where you guys shoot together and go to meetups together and whatever, if they're all on one or the other, you might bias a little towards that because you're going to get some help.
Mm-hmm.
Same way I answer the Canon Nikon question. I'm like, what does everybody you know shoot? If they all shoot Canon, buy Canon. You can switch lenses. You can help each other with error code 20 problems. If they
use what your friends use.
Yeah, use what your friends use, because there's your immediate base of support, because not everybody's lucky enough to be able to get Scott Kelby and Matt Kluskowski on the phone like me. So it's very important to use what your friends use, I think, to get started. And they're both free to try. And I think you accurately assess the programs for the most part. The only difference is for me, I did make a fairly deep foray into Lightroom at one point in time, just so I could understand the differences. And I'm just as biased towards Aperture as you guys are towards Lightroom. I taught the first ever class taught in public about Aperture at Macworld when it was so new that they didn't even have a manual yet. They gave me a 27-page PDF and said, work from this.
Wow.
And that was like 6 years ago, and I've used it every day since. And the thing is, I think that for me, I am old and decrepit and senile, and if I were to trust my images to Lightroom catalogs that were not managed by the program, I'd be calling you guys looking for suicide pills because I would lose thousands of pictures. So for me, I use Aperture primarily because I'm old and decrepit, and I don't ever have to worry about where my images are because Aperture takes care of them and puts them in the vault for me. So if you're prone to losing things, you might look at Aperture because it'll help you keep them together. But in Lightroom, you've got to remember where your catalogs are. And I know it's terribly easy, but for me, it wasn't. So, do you ever have anybody ever called you and say, I can't find my catalog?
Yes. Sure.
That would have been me.
Yeah.
I would be.
You know what? I think it was you. I think exactly. I remember that email, Scott.
Where are my pictures?
Sounds very familiar.
Yeah. Well, we get that with Aperture, too. People hit the 9 key, and then, of course, it goes off the screen. It's not deleted. And they're like, I can't find my picture. You just need to know that. Well, it's been a lot of fun having you guys on. This is a real experiment for us. I don't know how everybody's going to perceive it. We're using a new technology called Blog Talk Radio, new to us, I should say, and we're not recording over Skype like we usually do. This allows us to bring in more people, so there were 3 of us, kind of a round table instead of just 2, and worse, even just me. So I will see how everybody feels about this. How do you guys feel about it?
I liked it, except for Matt.
I was going to say Scott Bourne. I was going to say I liked it because of Scott.
Oh, there you go. Ding, 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 ding.
Well, I do have to say, you know what helps tremendously is I'm looking straight across the hallway.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like
that's
I can see when he's talking. Yeah. And I can see when he's gesturing to me.
Okay.
But I could see when he's talking, so that, you know, because we're on screen a lot together, so we kind of know each other's visual cues, so that helps a lot. I liked it because of Scott. It was better that way.
Well, listen, where would I'll start with you, Mr. Kelby. Where would you like me to send people who are looking for you when you don't happen to be gracing our show with your presence?
Send them to G Plus, like a G Plus. To Google Plus is where I think I'm doing the most stuff. I stay very active on there. I post numerous times a day because I'm stupid and don't have anything else to do, clearly. So if you just go to Google Plus and search for me, Scott Kelby, you'll find me. And we have a special Google address, don't we? I think I'm Scott.
You're Scott G Plus.
At G Plus.
No, just
Scott G Plus.
Scott G Plus.
Scott and the letter G and the word plus. .com. Scott G. I'm going to type that in and see if that's real, because I think Matt makes a lot of these things up. It probably leads you to Matt's site. Let's see.
Scott, it would be good to know your own address at some point, Mr. Kelby.
No, it is. It's Scott G. plus.com. So that's where I would, you know, and also write a daily blog at scottkelby.com, but that's too hard to spell.
All right. How about you, Matt?
You could go to my Google Plus page, which is mattgplus.com. And that might go to Scott's page. MattGPlus.com, and then my Lightroom blog, which is over at LightroomKillerTips.com.
All right.
And I post all kinds of videos and presets, free presets, and all kinds of stuff on there.
Aren't you involved in some sort of preset mania as we speak?
Preset mania.
I kind of did a whole week of holiday presets, templates and all kinds of different things that you can use to kind of put holiday-themed graphics and whatnot on your photos inside of Lightroom. So
I think you guys should have some voiceovers to go with these special pages. So it'll be like, Preset Mania!
Wasted Media.
Yeah, like to get the WWF kind of voice going on so people know it's but really special. Well, listen, it's been a lot of fun. I'm going to be signing off. I'm going to sign off the way I always do, and I'll say goodbye to the Kelby folks and tell you we appreciate you listening to Photo Focus. Go out there and make pictures. Don't just take pictures. We'll see you on the next Photo Focus. Bye, guys.
Take care, Scott.
See you.
Thanks, Scott.